This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Up next, Noel Barry-Mertz is joined by Dr. John LaSala, professor of medicine at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. They cover right and left heart hemodynamic support options.
John, welcome to AXL.
Thank you, Noel. It's a pleasure to be here.
So why are we talking about this now, right and left heart support options?
Probably because we have more of them now than ever before. For 40, 50, 60 years, we lived with a balloon pump. That's still our tried and true way of taking care of patients.
And ECMO.
And ECMO's been there
for
decades, certainly. Mostly used surgically, but we certainly have used it in the cath lab before for high-risk angioplasty. But you have a number of other devices that have come along in the last decade or so, which provide somewhat more convenient and some people would say even more beneficial effects in supporting both your patient who has a high-risk angioplasty as well as getting into the realm of cardiogenic shock.
Right, and rescuing shock, which is a hard thing to rescue.
The
so is that another thing that's changed? Are we seeing more shock?
The shock cases nationally are probably the same to slightly elevated. But what's interesting is shock knows no bounds. It shows up at both community hospitals, small hospitals, rural hospitals, as well as the major centers. So perhaps the most important thing is how best to triage those people efficiently, appropriately, because delays in shock translate rather significantly in mortality.
And I sometimes think as a preventive cardiologist that we're probably seeing older people with more complex cardiovascular disease that probably sets them up maybe for more shock. That part I don't know. But do you think that's true? We've rescued a lot of patients and kept them alive.
We see them young and old, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. It knows no bounds. We call it a one-shot cardiomyopathy. If you have a proximal LAD and you start infarcting that area,
yeah,
and it's not reperfused quickly, that patient may be 40, 50, 60 years old.
If or they 70
had,
or 80.
Or 70 or 80.
But
if they haven't
already
had a time
bypass
to precondition, if they're not preconditioned, they will go into shock relatively
exactly
quick.
I think also that we've started to think about shock differently. And instead of scooting straight up to the cath lab, what's the out-of-the-box idea that we're starting to think about?
Well, I think what we've done in the past is sometimes stabilize, particularly if you're not in a hospital that can do that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of layer onotropes, and we know that that mortality really goes up dramatically.
Right. Any delay just
any delay
wastes
or high
time
dose or two of them, it just dramatically goes up geometrically. What we see is that you should get to reperfusion quickly, but once you're in the lab, you may want to stabilize that blood pressure first. Some very
before
interesting data.
Before you start the PCI.
Yes. And there's a shock initiative coming out of Detroit, series of people who are normally competitors actually getting together and trying to handle this uniformly. Well, we try to worry more about the perfusion first, unloading the ventricle, put less of a metabolic strain on that ventricle who's not receiving oxygen, obviously, in those infarcted areas, but then perform the angioplasty after that takes place. Very early data, not randomized, clearly speculative, but fascinating that they're seeing people who have an Impella placed first, a transaortic pump, prior to their PCI, their angioplasty, having a lower mortality as opposed to people who get the angioplasty first, followed by the pump.
So interesting. So another paradigm that makes perhaps sense, except we'll need to test in a clinical trial.
We do.
All right, so let's move on. So tell us then, what are these new innovations beyond the balloon pump and beyond ECMO? There's a couple, I think.
There is. I mean, chronologically, the tandem heart was the very first one on the scene. It did require transseptal catheterization because the inflow catheter draws blood from the left atrium. It's then externalized, magnetically driven pump, now pumps in a cannula very similar to what you would use for ECMO to the arterial circuit. So it can unload the left ventricle that way. It can give you perfusion, particularly to the lower portions, and provide good flow. It can give you up 3.5-4 liters per minute.
And that's available now.
Absolutely.
People use it.
Been around for over a decade. The issue has always been that in an emergency situation, many people are not comfortable with doing a transseptal middle of the night for a shock patient. Mm-hmm. And so for quite a while, it did not become adapted in all but a few centers. So you needed something that was going to be more convenient, hopefully a little lower profile, and that anybody can do it at any time. So that led to the use of the Impella. 13 or 14 French decided on which power you want, inserted percutaneously from the artery. Mm-hmm. You need a good entry site. You have to be comfortable with large bore access, so to speak.
Always femoral.
Always femoral, but it can be done surgically or now with percutaneous means through a subclavian access.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's femoral. And then you basically go across the aortic valve like you would when you're putting a pigtail catheter into the left ventricle. Mm-hmm. If you can do that much and get good access, you can put an Impella in. Doesn't require a lot of training.
Exciting. Are there things that are kind of coming along that we should be looking for?
There's a pump called PHP. It has a similar concept, percutaneous heart pump. It started trials. It has been stopped temporarily while they retool a little bit, but same concept. Mm-hmm. Both this pump and the Impella draw from the left ventricle. They pump into the aorta, integrate. And that's key because if you compare this now with both ECMO and the tandem heart, that pump is being injected retrograde. So when a weakened heart begins to pump and the aortic valve opens, what it sees is this pressure head. In other words, you're increasing the afterload for both of those. And it puts additional work on and strain on the heart. The pumps that I just mentioned that go across the aortic valve, they pump into grade. They don't. They lower the wall stress. They lower the left ventricular and diastolic pressures. They don't increase afterload, but they do increase the mean arterial pressure. So you get better perfusion to the coronaries and the rest of the body.
And the better unloading probably contributes to this phenomenon where we see some patients actually recover.
I've been doing this for 30 years. I started life as a biochemist, and we did a lot of work on trying to get hearts to recover. And in the test tube, in the lab, lots of things look like they work. Yeah, it looks like we have myocardial salvage in almost everything we've done.
Yeah.
A lot of them all look good. This, I think, is fairly promising because at least in the modest amount of clinical data that's out there, what we see is hearts that tend to rebound better. There's less thinning of the wall. There's more preservation of the myocardium. And we just have to do a larger trial to prove that.
And the trial that you described. Let's talk a little bit about the implications while we're awaiting randomized controlled trials and new guidelines. What should we be thinking about? Certainly, if the shock patient shows up in a center of excellence, that's kind of a done deal. But what about smaller hospitals? What about interventional cardiologists who are pretty good at the STEMIs and the stents? What would you advise?
Well, I think that recognition is key. We frequently waste way too much time up front. And the most common the most common thing I hear is that, well, we opened up the artery and they look comfortable. They're laying flat. They're not tachypneic. They say they feel fine. They're breathing okay. But you know that they've had a big heart attack somewhere, proximal LED, proximal dominant circ, something like that. And if you were to measure the mixed venous O2, you would see that it's low. It's not good. So unless that heart rebounds quickly, that patient is prone to going into shock. So you got to act quickly. You got to be definitive. Do not continue to just escalate pressors or add a second one on top of that. Try to go to something that provides better mechanical support.
And you just use your clinical suspicion, or do you value those metrics?
All of the above. It's an amalgamation of all these things.
Okay. And how would an interventionalist who hasn't put in, for example, an Impella, how would they get trained?
Fortunately, as I mentioned, it's very simple, relatively simple. The big thing is the large bore access. So you're using a micropuncture technique or a Doppler to find the appropriate size vessel, a little contrast injection after a 4 French sheath goes in. Make sure you're in the right spot. You've got the right dimensions. And then you can work on using an extra stiff wire to put in a 13, 14 French sheath that will support the Impella. The rest is not much more difficult than putting a pigtail into the left ventricle. So you don't have to go to a special class. There are simulators. And all of these companies have clinicals that provide 24-hour support. And if you were training to do this, try to pick something that's relatively elective. And you can basically practice the motions. So this way you can do it when an emergency comes up.
And so it really does sound like it's that old-fashioned medicine adage, you could watch one, you could do one.
And teach one.
And teach one.
Almost. Yeah, almost that much.
Okay, great. So we'll look forward to this clinical trial. Does it have a name yet?
I don't have the name yet.
Okay.
But I can tell you that it's Dr. Bill O'Neill who is sponsoring this up in Detroit. Bill has been seminal in providing some of the initial data showing that insertion and support is better than just going on with the PCI.
Well, and he's such a great, it'll be done with Bill in charge.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, listen, John, thank you for sharing this important update with our Axel audience, and we'll look forward to further reports.
Thank you so much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.